Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How do the secrets we keep shape the people we become? And what happens when we choose to fictionalize the stories of our lives instead of embracing the truth? With the publication of Reading Lolita in Tehran, Azar Nafisi won fans around the world for her unflinching portrayal of the bitter realities endured by women in Iran. She was born there in 1955 to a privileged family. Her father served as mayor of Tehran. Her mother was one of the first women to serve in the Iranian parliament. She was educated in England and the United States. But Nafisi's life was also colored by secrets she kept to protect herself, her family, even her sexual abuser. And her self-image was indelibly marked by a controlling, perfectionist mother who fabricated the details of her own life whenever the truth did not suit her. Azar Nafisi is a visiting fellow and lecturer at the Foreign Policy Institute of Johns Hopkins University's School of Advanced International Studies. Her new memoir is called Things I've Been Silent About, Memories. Azar, welcome to Think.
Thank you very much, Chris.
You have said that you were somewhat obsessed as an adult with your relationship to your mother. Can you talk about what made her so different from the parent that you needed her to be?
Now that I reflect back on it, I think that her life was mostly shaped by what she lacked in her childhood or in her life to begin with, an absent mother. The only thing my mother could remember about her own mother was the night she died. When my mother was very young, and afterwards she was left with the proverbial stepmother who would treat her as a poor relation. And I think that that lack in her life shaped her relationship with her family, that bitterness. And this is partly responsible.
And she coped with loss often by sort of creating something different in her mind and to tell everyone else.
Yes, that is what she did, and that is why I think that it's so important for us to have a dynamic conversation with our past. What happened to her, her second loss was when her first husband, whom she met when she was very young and who was charming and in love with her and the son of the prime minister, he didn't tell her that he had a fatal disease until their wedding night. So she sort of nursed him to death, and that made her losses so important to her that she refused to believe in the present. She created fictions around those absent people in her life, and I think that becomes very, very dangerous if you don't leave the past behind or create fictions about it.
And so complicated with her first husband in that, in so many ways, although she did love him herself, it was quite a betrayal for her not to have been told about this before they married.
Yes, you're very right, Chris. And that is something that she refused to accept. She so much glorified those 2 years and her life with her first husband that she refused to see how hurt she was by him not telling her the truth about him, about her himself, and putting her in a position where a young girl would nurse her husband to death. That betrayal she translated into betrayals that she would expect my father and later on me and my brother commit against her. And I think that is what made her, partly ruined her own life.
You open the book by telling us most men cheat on their wives in order to have mistresses. My father cheated on my mother to have a happy family life. what do you mean? What did he expect to come of his affairs?
Well, it is also interesting about words. We usually stick with certain terms, but reality shows us that the terms we use, like adultery or cheating, can be used in completely different contexts. My father was a very gentle and a very idealistic man who, in terms of his personal life, he so much wanted to have happy marriage with my mother that for years he refused to see that this wasn't going right. And he tried to put up with it to become, to pacify her, but never looked for a radical cure to this relationship. And instead, then he started falling in love with other women, not because he wanted to have a mistress, but he really hoped that he would have then another happy domestic life with the woman that he had an affair and he finally married. And surprise, surprise, that woman was very much actually like my own mother in terms of her demands and intrusiveness, except that I think she lacked my mother's vulnerabilities, which made my mother also a person towards whom you felt compassion.
You were conscious from a very young age, once your brother was born, essentially, that your mother preferred him. How could you tell?
I could tell also, well, my mother on one level was a very naive and open person, although she was closed in other ways, so she would say it. Apart from the fact that she would show my brother small attentions, that she denied it, she would say that I had always hoped for a son who would grow up and defend me, in fact, which I found very ironic because both her own father and her first husband not only did not defend her much, but put her brought that sort of bitterness to her life. And she always, in terms of her quarrels, she would always take his side, although he was very faithful and loyal to me, and he would not tell on me. But she approved of him more, you know.
What did she want for you?
You know, that is what breaks my heart, actually, because not only in her private personal life was she deprived of the kind of love and attention that I think she, like any other child or young woman, deserves, but in terms of her public life, she was very intelligent and always at top of her class, and she had always hoped to become a doctor like her half-brother and many in my family, but both because of the stepmother and the family situation where she was the neglected one despite her talents and a society that did not pay that much attention at the time, not very unlike U.S. at that time, pay attention to women's public potentials. She could never realize her public ambitions the way she wanted. A close friend of hers used to say, another intelligent woman gone to waste. You know? And what she wanted for me was, which I appreciate, was that she wanted me to become an independent woman, to have my education, to be my own woman in many ways, although she also resented when I became that.
Well, and I wonder if her constant disappointment in you had something to do with projecting herself onto you.
Yes, because, you know, a relationship, no matter what level, needs a sort of opening, and you need to blossom in a relationship because there should be this constant give and take. And with her, it wasn't so much take, but intrusiveness. She wanted to shape me, to mold me according to her own image of what she wanted me to be. And also she wanted me to take always her side, not just against my father, but against whoever she disapproved of. She would read my letters, read my diaries, listen to my conversations, and then blame me for what I had said in secret. That made me both resent and at times resist her.
Did she love you?
I think there were times when I did not think she did, but I believe she did. Because she also went to great lengths. You know, I think love, you should learn how to love at times. I mean, a child who has never seen love, it's very difficult for her to impart it. But she did her best. And she would do her best by... for example, she wanted me to study well, and she didn't know English. Her second language was French. In order for me to learn English at a very early age, she would go to her sister and every day learned the page that was my homework. And then at night she would come and work on my homework with me. She spent 3 months when they took me to England in a room, finding words in the dictionary for me and you know, looking after me so that I would learn and I would be the woman that she was not. So there was that side of her as well that shaped my future.
Do those memories of the way your mother was with you, have they affected the way you parent your own children?
You know, Chris, I believe, yes, I think the answer is a positive in two ways. One, I became almost obsessively concerned that within our family, my husband and I do not clash in a way that would force the children to take sides. I didn't want our voices, and of course, he's the type of person who never raises his voice, but that was what scared me. We would, because, you know, the clash between parents and forcing children to take sides makes a child very insecure. And it makes them feel as if they are mature, they should be mature beyond their years. And the second thing I learned was that I wanted to be friends on some level. I wanted my children to be open to tell me anything that they needed to tell me or they wanted to tell me. And I think that that helped me a great deal from the relationship I had with my own mother.
Azar Nafisi is my guest. She's a visiting fellow at the Foreign Policy Institute of Johns Hopkins University. We'll be back to our conversation with her in a moment. Her first book was Reading Lolita in Tehran. Her new book is Things I've Been Silent About, Memories. We'll be back in a moment. We want to pause for just a minute to do some fundraising here because we want to give you an opportunity to make an investment in your community, in this station that serves you, and in the program that brings you amazing guests like Azar Nafisi, who has had such an impact on the way many people understand life in Iran. Jeff Whittington is here now, senior producer of Think, the guy who makes sure that we have all these amazing guests.
Thank you, Chris. Hey, and thank you so much for listening today. Chris, you're absolutely right. Every time you turn on KERA, you hear your investment at work. When you call the station and make a gift of support of $200 or $300, every time you turn on the radio, whether it's during the Think program, whether it's Fresh Air with Terry Gross, across the board, your dollars go directly to pay for the programs that you listen to and that impact your community right here in North Texas. If you're looking for a place that can really make a difference in people's lives with your money, KERA is the place to do it.
1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number to call. You can also become a member or renew a membership online at kera.org. I believe we have copies of the new memoir. It's called Things I've Been Silent About. If you're a fan of Reading Lolita in Tehran, this one is even more personal, but really an amazing read. And there's photographs of Azar's family, so you really get a sense of the people that she's writing about here. And, of course, her style, her written style is so beautiful. You really can't put it down.
There's been a lot of buzz about this book, and the fact that she was available for an interview immediately caught my eye, and the conversation so far has immediately caught my ear, and I'm sure that you're in that same position. If you tune in today to hear what was on the show, you probably can't tear yourself away. Take just a moment right now and call 1-800-456-5372. Take just a moment right now and go online to kera.org. We can offer you, with our thanks, as a thank you gift at the $120 membership level, your very own copy of Things I've Been Silent About by Azar Nafisi. Of course, you can go get this at the bookstore. I try to say it every day. We're not selling you. You're not buying a book from us. We're thanking you with this book for making a pledge at the $120 membership level, which is one of the most popular levels among people who've been pledging during this membership campaign.
We need to hear from you because you build this station into what it is. You know, Azar Nafisi's work is really emblematic, I think, of the sort of thing that we like to do on this show. It is, you know, on the surface, a story of her family, but it is also a history of contemporary Iran and the Iran that she grew up in. And it sort of makes you think about ideas that you might not have considered until you speak to her and read her work. We're proud to be able to bring this to you. It happens because of your support. 1-800-456-5372 is the number. You can also go to kera.org.
Please do your part right now. We've raised quite a bit of money so far, thanks to you, but we're still waiting to hear from some of you at 1-800-456-KERA or online at kera.org. More of the conversation between Chris and Azar Nafisi after this break.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses beginning in January. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is memoirist Azar Nafisi. Her first book was Reading Lolita in Tehran. Her new one is called Things I've Been Silent About, Memories. We would love to send you a copy with our compliments when you join the station now at the $120 level or above by calling 1-800-456-5372. You can also do that online. If you want to join our conversation, we would like to hear from you at our other phone number, 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. I want to go back for a minute, Azar, to this idea. You mentioned not wanting your children to ever have to take sides between you and your husband. I wonder if you think that your father, who is this sympathetic figure who really was a confidant of yours,
yeah,
and recognized a kindred spirit, if he helped to make your mother the bad guy by always being the sympathetic one.
Well, you know, Chris, that is what, as I grew up and I became more empathetic towards my mother, both in terms of her personal life as well as, you know, as a woman, her social and cultural identity. I empathized with her more, and although my father, whom I don't think I ever loved anyone the way I loved him, was so gentle and as you mentioned, sympathetic character, I do think that I never acknowledged really his share until very later on in our relationship. He would use me as his confidant, so all his woes about my mother would come to me, and I would take it on myself to do the things that he was pleased with, and then also I would even justify the fact that he would fall with another woman because I felt that my mother was so bad to him, and you are right, that created a one-sided view of my mother, although that I don't think was his purpose, because he constantly told us how she had suffered in her childhood, how we should be nice to her. But on the other hand, his woes and making me complicit would negate those other claims. So yes, I agree with you.
You remember the first lie that you ever told, and it was to protect your father.
Yes, it was always to protect him. I was so worried about him. You know, at nights I would stay up until he came home because I was worried that something would happen to him. And because of the crisis and the trauma he went through every time they had bad fights, I would lie for him. One thing about my mother was that if she disliked one of their common friends, then we had to banish them. And she did that sometimes to my father's best friend or his family. And so what would happen would be that father and I would visit his friend or his family by lying to my mother or not telling her. And that is how it started. And then it went on with other things, that when he was in love with someone, I again would know about it but would not tell her, and that made me feel guilty at the same time. I felt the burden of having to lie.
You write about your family's involvement in politics, and I'm paraphrasing here, that although they were all disastrous at politics, ultimately they were avidly civic minded.
Well, you know, that is what I'm fascinated by in terms of my parents' attitude towards politics, because on one hand they were very publicly conscious people, and the discussions at home were always about politics and what should be right and wrong. On the other hand, and this I admire them for it, although politically it becomes a weakness, they were outrageously outspoken, and they did not like to belong to a group or listen solely to one authority, despite the fact that we lived in a society where politically it was very authority-oriented, and you couldn't survive if you did not belong to a political group. And they paid for that. They paid a price for being always on the margins and never accepting to become exactly part of the political elite.
Your father spent 5 years in jail.
My father was first the youngest mayor of Tehran, and among perhaps the most popular until then, and very dynamic. And then he was he confronted both the prime minister and the minister of interior, and he was sent to jail on trumped-up charges, and he refused to leave jail and stayed there until he could defend himself at his trial. And he, in fact, defended himself. There were 125 pages, I think, of his defense.
And the people of the city of Tehran contributed the money for his bail.
Oh, yes. That was because, you know, in his diaries while he was in jail, a lot of times he was talking about the fickleness of people who, while he was in power, were all around him and then would subsequently, you know, avoid him. But he was amazed. On the day that he was going to be set free on bail, he writes about from the smallest grocer to the wealthiest merchant to people he had never known, they all flocked. And although they had raised the bail very high, they almost brought double the money that the bail had asked, and that touched him very much, the way people, ordinary people, some of whom he had never met, the way he had appreciated him.
Was he entirely candid, Azar, in his diaries, or were they always written with an audience in mind?
You know, it's very difficult to say this. I know that we are a family of diary writers. I mean, writing a diary, I wrote my first words in my diary when I was 12. I still have those pages with me. I tore them off and brought them with me. My brother did it. My cousins on my father's side did it. This was mainly on my father's side. I know that when I wrote my diary, I was not expecting people to read it. But for him, I think that he might have written it so that he could use part of it, because the parts that were personal, I don't know if he was going to use. But I'm sure that the political encounters and his political life was something that he wanted to be known. And so those parts maybe he wrote for other people's eyes. But he does say in his diaries, in his jail diaries, that he wants his children to read these maybe and learn from them.
We've talked about your mother having fictionalized entire sort of segments of her life. I'm wondering, though, if you think there's a parallel. Do you think that memoir, although all the events that you characterize may be true, is it its own kind of fiction?
Well, you know, a memoir, there are two aspects to memoir. One, as you mentioned, memoir is a narrative. And any narrative, no matter how honest we are, or no matter how factual we are, is based on a construct. Even if every single fact is, as we say, you cut and paste. You can't just write about a whole life. In my own memoir, there are many important events and people who play small roles, and there are others who play a much larger role, partly because at one point this memoir has to pick up certain themes in my life and experiences and cannot include all. So I think it would be a little strange to say that a narrative is not a construct, you know. On the other hand, in the memoir, as much as your memory helps, is and memory is very fickle, I know, and as much as you can rely on facts, you have to rely on facts. But there is a fictional aspect to any memoir in the sense that it is based on a fictional construct. So we have that paradox in every memoir, but it should try to be as true as it is possible to the facts of a life. The difference between my memoir and my mother's memories is that she would impose fictions on her own life and lives of others. And I think it's very dangerous when we don't have a dynamic conversation with the past, when we freeze the past and impose it on our present life. But when you write about that life, you're trying to gain some sort of control over reality and to sort of be liberated from it, not become more entangled by what you have been.
Let's talk about the title of your book. This is taken from a list that you made for yourself.
Yes.
Yeah, can you talk about that?
Yes. Well, you know, I still have this habit that I make a lot of, I mean, write about a lot of titles in my books. Some of them are just purely titles. Some I used for books. Some come out and some are aborted. But I was writing my first book, which was on Vladimir Nabokov, and I wanted to write not just about a literary criticism of Nabokov's novels. I was becoming very interested in how reality shapes fiction and fiction changes our perception of reality. So I wanted to talk about different times I had read Vladimir Nabokov. And at that time, because of the political and social situation, I couldn't be frankly talking about not just the political aspects, but also about the personal aspects of those realities. So I made a title in my diary and I wrote things I've been silent about. And every once in a while I would add something like falling in love in Tehran, watching Marx Brothers in Tehran, reading Lolita in Tehran, reading Jane Austen in Tehran. And that became sort of my excuse in my diary to just talk about things that I could not talk about publicly. And when I was writing this book, I kept in my mind also going back to that title because I felt it's far more difficult to talk about things that are personal that you have been silent about than things that are political.
Azar Narfisi is my guest. Her new book is called Things I've Been Silent About, Memories. You may also have read her earlier book, Reading Lolita in Tehran. We'll be back to our conversation with Azar in just a moment. Right now, we would ask that you take a moment to give us a telephone call at 1-800-456-5372. That's the number to call to become a new member of KERA, to make the decision that this is something that's important to you, that public radio plays a role in your life, and that you're not going to sit around and wait for everyone else to do it. You are going to take on the responsibility of keeping your radio station strong in your community. Again, the number is 1-800-456-5372, or you can go online to kera.org. Jeff, that's a great place if people are interested in thank you gifts to check them out.
Yeah, you can see many of the thank you gifts that are available during this membership campaign at kera.org, including Azar Nafisi's new book, Things I've Been Silent About. It's available with our thanks when you join the station at the $120 membership level. You know, Chris, we've had fantastic success yesterday, and even this morning, we had a great response. And I just would like to thank everyone who has stepped up, has pledged their support, has made a contribution to KERA, either online at kera.org or on the phone at 800-456-5372. Because we've sort of built up this movement. You know, people are joining this movement faster, earlier than they normally do during a membership campaign. And if you would just go ahead and make your call right now, to 800-456-KERA, get it over with, get it taken care of today, you will add to that the speed with which we're going to wrap up this membership campaign.
Yes, believe it or not, despite everything you may have been led to believe, we are just as happy as you are, if not happier, when things are concluded. That way we know the budget is set and we're able to continue providing you programming all the time. As it is, we come to you, we interrupt your time of listening to programming so much less on this station than on any commercial station where they're selling advertisers your time. Because, you know, effectively that's the way it works. We choose to come to you directly for the money where someone else would get that $120 a year or whatever it is by selling advertisers a chunk of time so that they can sell you products. Nothing wrong with that formula, but we really like the direct way it works here and ask that you support it by calling 1-800-456-5372.
And of course, our charter with the FCC requires us to be non-commercial. So while we do have underwriter announcements that are paid for by corporate entities, many of which are right here in North Texas, and the station is supported that way, they are far, far less commercial in sort of their scope, in the language they use, and really in the time they take out of your radio programming. We on Think, for example, provide you with 48 and a half minutes, actually 49 and a half minutes of talk time in a regular program, including the 1 minute billboard at the beginning of the show before the newscast. 48 and a half minutes. Okay. And then 5 minutes of that is a newscast. So that takes up to 54 and a half minutes. The rest of the time is spent with credits and with underwriting credits. And sometimes you'll even hear an arts calendar, usually at least one of the hours, which is a minute long. So there's really very little time taken up by commercial support messages. We come to you three times a year and ask you to directly offset the costs of this show and all the programs on KERA so that that can continue to be the format, that can continue to be the way that public radio is run.
You know, if you have been thinking to yourself, I do want to get involved with my community, I do want to feel like I'm making a difference in this country, in this community, for something that really matters, why not start here with a service that you already use and benefit from? We are a nonprofit. We're not a charity. We don't have stockholders or shareholders. We take the money that you give us and we turn it back into programming. We try to operate as leanly as possible, but we provide a service to many, many people. If you are partaking of that service, the expectation really is that you will also contribute to it. If there's some absolutely overriding reason why you can't join at all, we understand that. But I would imagine for the lion's share of us, it's possible to become a member of KERA, especially considering that you can choose how much to contribute every year.
And paying for what you use is not a foreign concept. You get in your car, you
Welcome
drive
to America.
It, you drive it, you're paying for the gasoline. You know, you turn on the television, you're paying for the electricity. In many cases, you're paying for cable television or satellite television. You use your cell phone, you're paying for that cell phone service. Just like your unlimited texting plan that you may have on your cell phone service, we'd like to offer you an unlimited listening plan to KERA. When you call, you make $150 or $200 pledge for the year, or maybe your membership is current and you can give an additional gift at 800-456-5377. Right now, then we can offer you that unlimited listening plan just like you have on your cell phone bill, where you can listen all the time and not worry that you're not paying for the service that you are using. That's what we're asking you to do. Take responsibility for the fact that you're listening and do your part, because lots and lots of people are doing it. We'd love for you to do it as well.
1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number. I'm glad, Jeff, that you brought up unlimited texting. It costs $15 a month where I get my phone. And that, I have to tell you, the vast majority of texts, some of them are useful. Many of them are from, friends and acquaintances, and they're not necessarily things that change my life. The content on public radio has the ability to, if not change your life, certainly affect your life.
And that's a $180 membership if you join as a $15 a month sustaining member to KERA. Please do it right now at 800-456-5372 and online
at kera.org. That's also where you can check out the thank you gifts, including Azar Nafisi's book, Things I've Been Silent About, Memories. That is available with our compliments when you join us today at the $120 level or above. So do go online now or give us a call at 1-800-456-5372.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses beginning in January. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Azar Nafisi. Her original book that made a splash all over the world was called Reading Lolita in Tehran. Her newest memoir just out is called Things I've Been Silent About, Memories. That's available when you join us at the $120 membership level at 1-800-456-5372. To join our conversation, call 1-800-933-5372. That's where we find Susan in Dallas. Hello, Susan.
Hey, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Good. Thanks for taking my call. A couple of things. I really do think that books like this are very important because I think understanding the cultures and religions of other places is important. And in that vein, I have an opportunity to go to Iran in the fall with the World Affairs Council, and I'm considering going. I think I will go. My parents met there during the war, and I really want to go. But I'd like to know the author's opinion on whether that would be relatively safe, number one. And the other thing is, I'd like to know a couple of books that she thinks I should read before I go so that I'll be more prepared, novels and nonfiction, both. And I'll take my call off the air.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you.
I will tell you that most American friends who have gone to Iran, they have been amazed by the hospitality of the Iranian people, the generosity of the spirit, and just the beauties. Unfortunately, what we get from that country is mainly about the Iranian regime. And if we differentiate between the regime and the people, I think that we find many gems. Of course, I'm not in a position to say how safe and secure any country is, but from just experience. People who have been to Iran, except the Iranian citizens who have been arrested and jailed and harassed for political or social reasons, foreigners who have been allowed to enter have been up to now quite immune. So, you know, I have to always be careful to, you know, not speak on behalf of something that I don't know. But I can tell you that from experience, Iran has been very safe for people who visit. And you will have a wonderful time. You will find such variety. Tehran and its mountains, a very modern and hectic and polluted city, to historical cities like Isfahan or Yazd, and then the Caspian Sea just gives you a very different world. I'm glad you asked about what to read, because I would suggest for you to read, depending upon where your interest is, first of all, to get some information about the ancient culture. It is Iran goes back to 3,000 years at least, and you know, it would be good to see how various that culture is. There is this very wonderful graphic novel by Marjane Satrapi that was turned into a film, Persepolis, but a great novel about contemporary Iran that was written in the 70s, the most popular novel perhaps, called My Uncle Napoleon, which is full of humor, sensuality, and it's about a tender love story. And the last thing I want to say, read Persian poets. The greatest epic poet we have is called Ferdowsi. His Persian Book of Kings, with a great translation by the British poet who teaches at Ohio State, Dick Davis, would enchant you. So I hope if you go, you have a wonderful time and bring back a lot of good tales.
Having read Azar literature from all over the world to probably a greater extent than most people have had a chance to do in this country, I'm wondering if you think that any particular culture writes most effectively about things like silence and secrecy.
You know, one great thing, Chris, that I find about literature, and that is why I constantly have to talk about the universality of literature, is that stories coming from whatever culture have two aspects to them. One, they have to be very particularly and uniquely about where they come from to bring that flavor. But once they do that, then it is a matter of the connections they make, because all of a sudden you find how universal, when you read the epic poets of Ferdowsi, the stories about love, jealousy, betrayal, adultery, you know, power. All of these are very similar to what you read in Homer, for example. And I think it's a great sense of liberation and connectivity to know that people all around the world, coming from very different cultures, still have the same sort of feelings and emotions. But to be more particularly respond to your question, I think that great literature, in its own way, always breaks the silence. Ferdowsi wrote about the ancient Persia that had been defeated by the Arab conquest and resurrected those voices of the past. Emily Dickinson resurrects the voice of a very secret and private woman. So every great literature has to break a silence.
You are a U.S. citizen now. How does that affect your identity and your sense of yourself?
One great thing, of course, about being a U.S. citizen is that this is one country where you can have a mosaic of people coming from different places and bringing different outlooks and different perspectives on life. So in that, I feel very much at home. Another thing about being a U.S. citizen is that now I feel as accountable here as the country I feel should feel accountable to me. And I always tell my friends that whenever I feel worried and I start criticizing and not feeling quite at home, I know that that place is home. And I have felt that here for a while, because, you know, you care about a place.
when you question, people think questioning as something bad, as something as if you don't love a country, you question it. No, you question the places and the people you love because you expect better from them and you want them to change for the better. And I think that becoming a citizen at a time of crisis, it is also a time of hope because it's a time of questioning. And I want to be part of both the hope and facing the difficulties.
Let's take one last call. This one's from April in Arlington. Hi, April.
Hello. Thank you for taking my talk.
Sure.
Hi, Chris. Well, I, too, Azar, am a daughter of a mother who found it necessary to, fabricate some portions of her history. My question was, when did you first start noticing as a child, our parents really frame our worldview. When did you first start noticing that what mother said wasn't necessarily reality? And I found that that has colored my life in my development and that I'm very, like you might mentioned earlier, obsessed with truth and reality.
Yeah.
And how has that developed, affected your development?
Well, you know, I'm sure that there were many other incidents, but I remember one incident. There are certain incidents that sort of remain very clear in your mind. And one incident was when I was about 5 years old, when I remember my mother taking me to a room and making me sit on the floor, in fact, and kept asking me about where was I last night with my father and another woman. And in fact, I had not been out with my father and another woman. We had been to see a friend of his, but not another woman, but she insisted that I had. And she was scolding me and telling me how she hated little girls who lied. And I didn't lie to her. I wasn't lying. And that was very traumatizing because I saw my mother as so cold towards me and not trusting me. But, you know, I think the way we behave predicts the negative things that we, fictions that we create. I hadn't lied there, but her action predicted the fact that I would lie to her later on in life to go to my own friend's house or to do what I felt legitimately I would be doing. And that stayed with me, and the guilt of it stayed with me, and the fact that we need to face the truth in order to be relieved of both guilt and shame.
Could you have written this book while your parents were still alive?
You know, I don't think so, mainly because, first of all, in a way I feel that I've been writing this book all my life because this is the life story that so obsessed and focused me and shaped me. But to write it, I don't think so because I never thought that I will write a personal memoir until I was writing the acknowledgments to Reading Lolita and my mother died on January 2nd, 2003. And memories of her and the photographs that I was looking at obsessively for a long time with a magnifying glass, I felt that I was hooked. I couldn't get away from it. And my father died December of 2004, and they wouldn't leave me alone. I needed to finish the conversation, and I don't think while they were alive that urge was there as strongly as it was there later. I was going to write a book then called Republic of Imagination.
So instead, this is the one. Maybe that's next.
I hope so, because now living in this country, and I've been hearing you, and NPR is one of my most favorite of all institutions in this country. You know, the question that I have for not the new administration, but for people in different communities is everybody's asking for a bailout, even Saks Fifth Avenue. Who will bail out imagination and thought? And what will a country be if its libraries, museums, cultural institutions like your own will not be able to function because the people neglected to remember that we need our soul in order to survive as well as bread?
Azar Nafisi's latest book is called Things I've Been Silent About, Memories. Azar, it has been a great hour. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you so much.
Thanks to all of you who have made financial contributions to KERA today. You can still do so by calling 1-800-4 845-656-5372, or you can go to kera.org online. It takes just a couple of minutes, and it is, as Azar Nafisi says, and we didn't put those words in her mouth, but it is a great way to support an institution that is, I don't know that we're all about imagination here, but certainly thought and trying to understand things and looking at issues from different perspectives. That's something that we're very proud to have an audience that embraces. And that audience is you. You're also the supporter of the programming that we produce.
That's correct, Chris. It's so true that, and when times are tough and when things are dark on the horizon, or when, you know, things have happened in the world that cause us to sort of question, you know, really what is going on here, it's nice to have a place to turn. It's nice to have libraries. It's nice to have museums, places to go. It's nice to have places to take your family and that don't cost a lot. And that's exactly what KERA provides. It provides a resource, an informative and educational, entertaining resource that really doesn't cost a lot. As a matter of fact, it's free, except we would like for you to consider supporting it at 1-800-456-5372 or online at kera.org, because only with your support do organizations like the museums, like the library, those kind of cultural institutions, and you know what, we include KERA in that list as well. Only with your support can those institutions continue to provide that refuge from sort of all the discord, from all the struggle. And that's what it's all about.
1-800-456-5372 is the number to take refuge from the discord. You can also join us online at kera.org. It's a beautiful thing, the way that public radio works. It's a beautiful thing that so many people who simply believe in something reach into their wallets, get out their credit card or get out their checkbook or, you know, a pile of quarters from under the seat and make it happen. We know that this is not something we can force you to do, and honestly, we wouldn't want to. We love the idea that you come to us of your own volition.
When you make your pledge of support, consider it a down payment on that little cabin in the woods of your mind that you can
escape to when things get ugly.
I'm going to stretch this one. I've got it. I've got a new thread here that you can go to anytime you turn on the radio. It's a place where you know that, you know, perspectives, differing opinions, a uniquely human sound and an exchange is going to be more valued than sort of a conflict. And that's what public radio really stands for and has in North Texas since 1974. This is the 35th anniversary of KERA. And I've been saying for a couple of days, why not, if you've never supported the station, why not put a $10 a year value on it? $10 a year. We were talking in the last break about unlimited texting costing $15 a month for some people. We're asking you to pay $10 a year and make a $350 contribution today. 1-800-456-5372.
Having listened for 35
years. Yeah, if you listen for 35 years in honor of the 35th anniversary, why not? Or make a $35 contribution today and become a fully fledged member for the first time. It's very easy. It's very convenient. You just do your part. It just takes a minute. You can go online to kera.org and you can make fill out the pledge form yourself.
This is your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, K261 CW 100.1 in Tyler, K202 DR 88.3 in Wichita Falls, K257 EV 99.3 in Sherman, and online at kera.org.
No matter where you listen, whether it's Wichita Falls, whether it's Tyler, whether it's Sherman, whether you're listening from somewhere else in the country. We got a pledge yesterday morning from Burbank, California.
Very nice.
During Morning Edition. You're listening to KERA. That's the thing about public radio. There are hundreds of stations all over the country, but they're all programmed, they're all planned, and they're all executed by that local entity, whomever is making the decisions or whoever is making the decisions at that public radio station is making those decisions based on you, based on your response, your feedback, the things that you get something out of, the things that you support. That's what's happening here at KERA. There are many public radio stations, but this one is yours. And without you, literally, quite literally, it's useless. And I know that without KERA, I would be useless, and many of our listeners would feel like they were useless without the news and information that they get from KERA. So please cherish it and support it. Make a contribution because KERA can make a difference.
1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number. We do still have copies available of Azar Nafisi's new book, Things I've Been Silent About, Memories. It is her new memoir, much more personal than reading Lolita in Tehran, about her family and growing up with her parents. We would love to send that to you when you make a $120 contribution or more to the station. Our telephone number is 1-800-456-5372. We have a crack team of volunteers waiting to answer your telephone call. This is your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas-Fort Worth Denton, and online at KERA.org. We also would love to hear your call, 1-800-456-5372.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.